I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
For both of you, are you people who are like, never go to bed angry? Or is it sometimes like, I don't want to argue until 4 a.m.?
No. I'm like, we fight till dawn!
No, Melody, no!
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together, see what it's all about.
Ducking out!
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that, unlike Tom Hanks, recognizes a lesbian wedding when we see one. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with comedian Madeline Smith about couples therapy. And also, what are you talking about, Carolyn?
There was an article where Tom Hanks was at a beach and there was a wedding going on, and he popped in to tell, I guess, just one of the brides how beautiful they were, but it was a lesbian wedding, and he asked, where's the groom? And then was delighted to find out it was a lesbian wedding, but at the same time, I'm sure that both brides were in plain sight and it just didn't register, because the heteros still don't know that we're just like them. We're getting married. We're having families. We're getting divorced. We're doing it all. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't already, 5 stars, a little comment, compliment.
If you're nasty. And boy, did we have a nasty review.
Stop it.
No, like,
when?
like from a freak. It's like,
okay.
The review is 5 stars, which, thank you so much. And then it's just like a phone number, and it's like, text me, I need to squirt. And it's like, the wet emoji, like the water drip emojis.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know.
Wow, what a roller coaster of emotions that just was for me.
Look up that area code if you're local to that phone number in our Apple Podcast reviews.
If you need to hydrate.
So funny.
I love it. I love it. Okay, we are back at Stonewall. We're having a show at Stonewall on November 29th at 7 p.m. Emma Willman's going to be headlining. We're going to have a great lineup. It's going to be a lot of fun. So just stay glued to our Instagram for when we post about having tickets there. Also sign up for our Patreon. If you are a patron at the $5 level a month, you are getting a extra episode every single week. At $10, you join our Facebook group where we talk about all sorts of current events. We share our auto straddle quiz results and so much more.
And we're sharing our gayest things. I love that. Everyone's sharing their communal gayest things.
Love the community over there. That's where we get to know you better. $15 a month, you get ad-free episodes. We're following you back on social media. $20 a month, you get to come to our live shows for free. And then you also get to hang out with us on Zoom every other month. And it's always a really, really fun time. And that's where we really let loose with the goss.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully nobody's recording their screen. Anyway, Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
What is the gayest thing I did? Was it binging all of JoJo Siwa's Dancing with the Stars dances? Have you seen any of this yet?
No. Why? What prompted it? Just her being great?
A Gawker article. Gawker's back, by the way. It's like, wow. Right. So everything from the aughts is coming back, I guess.
Sure.
I mean.
Why not? What is time?
So I saw this Gawker article that reviewed them doing the Foxtrot to Look at Me, I'm Sandra D. I heard they got a 10 out of 10. I said, I want to see what a 10 out of 10 lesbian ballroom dance looks like. From there, I was binging it all. They're so fucking good. Like,
okay, now I'm gonna watch
into it.
Love it.
Even this freaky like it dance they did, ooh, where JoJo is Pennywise and her dance partner's a little boy. I mean, it is so good.
Ooh, I want to see that. Okay.
And I think that one was also a perfect 10. I had goosebumps. I watched them all. I want more JoJo Siwa. I didn't know anything about JoJo Siwa until the announcement that she had a girlfriend and that she came out. And now I'm obsessed. I also got to see her with her hair down. That felt cool. I don't know. I'm like, yeah, I love this look. More of that.
Yes.
I think the bows and the really tight ponies were throwing me off.
Right.
But like,
right.
She is a boss. She's really good. I'm really into it. And then I saw that there's a lot of discourse that her and her girlfriend broke up because
it happens.
Speculation that she has too much like sexual tension with her dance partner, who's I think straight and a lot older than her.
Okay.
And partnered with a man. So,
well, you never know.
I don't know what that's about, but holy shit, binging JoJo Siwa would be my gayest thing if I didn't
that
go to FranCon. Yeah.
Right.
We went to FranCon.
I was at FranCon.
Yeah, we went to FranCon. FranCon is like SantaCon, but you dress up like Fran Lebowitz, and boy, did we. I, on the way down, saw different Frans on the train, and I wasn't sure if they were just like lesbians in the wild,
right,
or if they were planning on going to FranCon, and I did see some of them there. And then some
yes.
of them I did not. It was very hard to tell who was just a Brooklyn dyke and who was going to FranCon.
Right. I felt like a professional lesbian.
Yeah. We had our glasses.
Which I was called earlier in the week. So I'm like, now I have the outfit to go. Yeah. The glasses, the Oxford shirt, the blazers.
Candy cigarettes.
Cufflinks, boots, rolled up jeans. Yes.
I loved it. It was so funny.
Yeah. It was really...
It was such a good idea. I don't know. I wouldn't have known about it if I didn't follow the bar that was hosting it, because a friend of the show, Lindsay Bowling, has a monthly comedy show there, Blinky's Bar in Williamsburg, and saw they had posted about it. Thank God I followed Blinky's. I feel like we really helped amplify it.
Right. Well, because I kept posting about it.
Yeah.
I learned about it from you. And then everybody, whenever I put it in my stories, would respond and be like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. But then people didn't go. Maybe they felt too intimidated, you know, to be like, oh, you have to dress like this daikon. And
yeah,
that could be a lot. But everybody was having a fun time with it. And I'll go again next year. I'll be up for FranCon.
Yeah. But then that got me thinking, I want a different kind of FranCon in addition to this FranCon. I want FranDresserCon.
You missed the convo, Melody, because we were sitting outside and another Fran was saying that they wanted Fran Dreschner Con. I'm like, maybe every year it's a different Fran. And I also said, then you can give out the award Best Dreshed.
Okay. Yeah, clearly I missed the conversation.
Yes.
I was thinking I had an original thought, but
but it's also a great idea. So
would be so much fun.
There's a market for it. Especially in New York.
So much more opportunity for a variety of
variety.
Looks.
Variety. Yes.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right. Love it.
Carolyn, what's the gayest thing you did? I know you have a list.
Yeah.
You had a pretty homo week.
It is so gay. And I know that Orlando was really gay, but that was mostly centered around one thing. I just kept doing gay things, and gay things kept happening. I can't mention them all, so I'm going to list them. You tell me which one's the gayest.
Okay.
So since we last recorded, I went to New Fest, which is the LGBTQ plus film festival that's held every year. And I went to see the Dyke Drama Shorts with my friend, past guest, comedian, Veronica Garza. So we went to go see a bunch of shorts that featured dykes, as it sounds. And I do want to shout them out because they were really great. So the shorts were Girls in the Party, Car Therapy, Uncoupling, Amy Victoria, Duet, Noor and Layla, First Date. And I'm sorry to say it, my favorite, Plaisir, which is a French short directed by Molly Gillis, I want to say is how to say her name. I loved it so much. I'm such a sucker for anything French and for anything gay. So combine the two. I wish it was a full length movie. It was just joy. I loved it so much. So any of those, seek them out. I don't know where they can be watched, or look for a festival in your area or something. But I love to support and promote queer cinema. So went to the after party, run into past guests, Valerie Complex, who, you know, is killing it with being a film critic, and always love running into Valerie. Then left. Who do I see on the street? Sarah fucking Ramirez. Clocked them right away. It was dark. It was midnight in Manhattan. But the hair, the eyes, but even with a mask right away, I'm like, oh my God. And I almost, like, I had a thought, do I ask them to dyke out? But then I'm like, no.
Be cool.
Be cool. Yeah. They were with someone. If they were alone, maybe I would have done it. But they were with somebody else. So I didn't want to do that. Then what else happened? I went to a burlesque show featuring Honey Burlesque, a queer burlesque troupe here in New York. Was I motivated by last week's guest, Ivy? Maybe. There's burlesque that goes on. But it's a different kind of burlesque than I'm used to. It's a lot more like interactive, like in the crowd. It felt like being at a strip club without nudity, but close to nudity, in a space full of mostly queer women and non-binary folks. And we're just showering these dancers with singles the whole time, but like in a very like a fun way, but it all felt like polite and queer. I don't know. I loved it. I'm going back this Sunday. What else? I went back to Stonewall to go to the Freakout Cabaret put on by DJ Chauncey. So it was all sorts of performances. And I went to that with past guests, Jess Rothschild. I went to FranCon. And after FranCon, I went to the Woods, which I haven't been to the Woods, the lesbian night at the Woods. Haven't been there in a while. And it was packed. And I ran into some cool folks who used to work and some still do at Henrietta Hudson. So ran into listeners. I don't know. Just gay.
Okay.
That's not even all of it. But yeah, I'm leaving it there.
New Fest.
The
New Fest night. Because that all just that night.
Yeah. It was very gay night.
Valerie, you got the after party. You got Sarah. Yeah.
All right.
I'm glad we figured it out.
Good. We called it. That was the gayest thing I did this week. I know. I posted a picture on my Instagram stories of some wood I chopped, and everyone was replying, oh, the gayest thing you did this week. I'm like, no.
Yeah, Carolyn actually had a longer list here on our doc, and I made her chop some of those things off because I'm sick of her showing me up week after week. I need to get back out there.
Had queer friends from out of town staying with her. Everything.
Shut
everything
up.
Was gay. It was all gay. It was all gay. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of gay.
What's gayer than
couples therapy? Our topic for this week.
Yeah.
Are our relationships not in themselves just one long couples therapy session? Maybe. We're going to get into it because today we're diking out with comedian Madeline Smith. And Madeline regularly performs all over the countries in clubs and festivals, on the road, has opened for so many amazing comedians, including past guests of the pod and comedy legend Judy Gold. Also co-hosts a podcast called Cheers for Queers. Love it. Let's get to it. Madeline, fellow Western New Yorker, thank
Represent.
You for diking out with us today. How are you?
Hello.
How are you?
Hi.
Is that how you say it?
How are you?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's weird. When I moved down to the city, people were like, oh, you have such an accent. And I never thought I did. But now I'm like, I guess it's a Rochester, like a flat A that's happening.
Say the word fashion.
Fashion?
Yeah, say it. Yeah.
Like fashion.
People always think I'm from the Midwest. And I'm like, no, I'm just from like Canada.
Same.
Like basically Canada.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that too. Yeah, I didn't realize it until I moved down south and I got my first job after college. I was living in Atlanta and I was making phone calls and everybody that I would call would be like, where in the Midwest are you from? I'm like, oh no, I'm not from the Midwest. I'm from Buffalo.
How dare you? I'm from Buffalo.
I just thought
being metropolis of Buffalo.
It's the Queen City, okay? Show some respect. I think we're all taught in Buffalo when we live there that Buffalo is a neutral accent and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. No, you're so right. Well, I'm actually...
Who lied to us? Why tell us that?
I'm from Rochester, which is essentially right. Buffalo. So, yeah.
But worse. Yeah. Yeah, it's Buffalo, but worse.
That's, yeah, pretty much. I feel like the only thing I will say, though, is the Rochester comedy scene, I did like a lot better than the Buffalo comedy scene, because the Buffalo comedy scene was all, like, I mean, I only did comedy for like 5 years at Rochester before moving to the city, but like the Buffalo scene was straight up all like blue collar dudes just being like, my wife, and like they all wanted to, they all wanted to fucking kill their wives. That was like their bit, was that they wanted to murder their wives. So like,
oh wow,
yeah.
Wow.
And Rochester was more like just equally bad dudes, but like hipster version of that, you know?
Yeah, so they're just doing bits about the fast ferry and garbage plates.
Yeah. They want to drown their wives in an IPA.
Yeah, exactly. Just like dressed like lesbians but still wanting to kill their wives. It was just very
a step in the right direction.
exactly. But no hate to Buffalo. Buffalo's great. I love it. Helium's there, except for the guy, right. The guy who runs it now. I think he's pretty suspicious, but yeah,
that's what we heard.
Yeah.
Who isn't?
What comedy club with those chromosomes? Yeah.
I know, just before we recorded, we were talking about another comedy club manager in Booker who they're all predators, which is so great.
Yeah, what a time to be alive doing comedy as a woman.
Love it. Yeah, love it.
That's why we like to just convene in safe spaces like Diking Out Podcast, where we get to talk about how gay we are, gay things we do, which is why we're wondering, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
Well, thank you for asking. I feel like I've been listening to your podcast so religiously for so long that I was like, I need to prepare myself for when one day I'm asked this question. And then I like...
Well, I'm glad you prepared yourself, because we're really bad at preparing people for this. Every week, we're like, we should have given them a heads up in case they don't listen.
That they're going to... You know what, though?
One day we will.
You guys know, obviously, because you guys are comics and you've done a lot of podcasts, but it's so like awkward when you're doing someone's podcast and you truly have never listened to it and you didn't even know that they had a podcast. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I know the format of this. And you're like, I have no idea. So like...
Right.
You get it. So I'm glad that with yours, actually, no. Sorry, the gayest thing I did, well, I had to get a procedure, like a medical procedure done, and my girlfriend drove through the torrential downpour, and then we got there, and I got it done, and then I woke up, and I was all out of my mind on anesthesia, and they're not supposed to let the person who dropped you off, they're not supposed to come back to the room, but I was like, where is Colleen? So I was literally, like, weeping, and the nurse went and got her for me, so that was me being, like, the neediest gay in the world.
Just weeping for your lover.
Which I think is the gayest thing.
Your gay lover in recovery.
I think that's the gayest thing you could do, probably, is just be fully weeping. So the nurse is like, well, for you, I'll make an exception because you're being very sad and aggressive. So
I was just going to add on to it, even though I don't even know what the procedure is while you're letting the gas out of your body. Because I feel like a lot of procedures, yeah, they like pump you full of gas, depending on what it is. Yeah. And then you're in that recovery room and then like everyone around you is farting and you're just like.
That was exactly it. It was like a stomach procedure. And there was like old man was like just right across the screen, like farting next to me.
So, yeah. It's always the old man that does not give two shits, literally, about the noises that he's making. Yeah.
Yep, that was it. That was exactly what was happening. You nailed it. You nailed it.
Great. Well, you know, I'm glad that she was there to provide that support for you. So we've covered off, you used to live in Rochester. You're in New York now doing comedy. What else before we get into our topic of couples therapy? Oh, my God. Do you want our listeners to know about you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I'm so excited to do your guys' podcast. Colleen was really excited about it because she was like, oh, this means you finally made it now.
I mean, we had Rosie and then we were working our way up to you. We're like, we got to get
that under our belt.
Some impressive people first.
Exactly.
Before Madeline agrees to dyke out with us.
Like Rosie O'Donnell, then Madeline Smith, the real creme de la creme. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I know you had Kristen Becker, the fucking gayest person in the world, as you said. So.
Right.
That was pretty much it. I don't know, man. I love your guys' podcast. I'm excited. She was jazzed up about it because of Mara Wilson, actually. That was her introduction to the podcast, was Matilda.
Okay.
Matilda.
Yes, so yes.
She was very excited about that. I don't know. What else do people need to know? I used to be married to a man, but then was too gay to be married to a man. And now I've been in a relationship with a lady for 2.5 years. So that's the whole backstory.
But the backstory is you were in a relationship with her while you were married.
Yes, it was a polyamory sitch.
I was wondering that because I remember being on a show with you, I think like just before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And you were talking about that in your material. I was wondering if that was the same woman.
It is. I know. That's so scandalous, isn't it? Because it's like the other woman situation. I know. But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not like. I think that polyamory, I don't know. I don't think that it's like a bad thing. And I think some people who I know who do it are really good at it. But I think for me, maybe I was subconsciously just doing it because I was like, oh, I'm like gay. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't think I had I don't think my husband who I was with is actually like the nicest person in the world. And, you know, is like, you know, we were together for super long and he's like my very best friend, but just, you know, not the right one for that situation. So yeah.
Right.
Did you get to explore your queerness before getting into this long-term relationship, or did that happen with the polyamory?
Yes, that is a very good question. I did. Because my husband and I, when we were just dating, we were always in an open relationship and stuff. And and when I was in college, that was when I slept with a lot of women, but then they were all like, a lot of them were really weird. I was just talking with my friend last night about this, but a lot of them were really weird after it. And we're like, oh yeah, I'm straight. I was just like really drunk. And like, so that's never a good feeling, you know, when like 10 people say that to you. You're like, oh,
wait, which college was this?
SUNY Fredonia, baby.
SUNY Fredonia. Oh my gosh. I wonder if any of them were my friends.
Maybe.
My very straight friends. Who I could only imagine doing that when they're drunk.
It was a lot of like, it was like a lot of like theater majors and like, you know, it was very.
Then they're definitely gay.
Right?
Or queer.
Right?
Rugby players?
Theater kids? Come on.
No. You know what's weird is I felt like when I was sleeping, when I first started sleeping with women, I seemed to mainly sleep with women who were like bi curious or questioning. And I felt like the rugby players were more like, we're established lesbians.
Yeah, no, they know. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like, we're not going to fuck with you. Because like, I don't know if it was like a biphobia thing or if it was just like, no, you're not in our, but I felt like I wasn't in the lesbian like clique in college quite so much.
They're scary. Yeah. When you're in college, the lesbian cliques, like, even though I was very much a, like, capital L lesbian, I was too scared to even try to actually penetrate the clique and be friends. They're just...
It's scary.
Lot.
They're very intense. They're very, like... And I think, you know, obviously now I'm 31 and it's like different, but I feel like when I was in college, especially when I was, like, early years of college, that was still a time where it was, like, very... I don't know. There was like so much difference between being like a lesbian and being bi. For some reason, there seemed to be a lot of like weird dislike between the communities or like biphobia or something. So it was just like odd. Like I felt like I would have liked to hook up with lesbians, but they were not very interested in me. So
yeah.
So yeah, it was just a weird time.
I always wonder if that's something that has actually gotten better over the years or if it's just a thing that when you're that age and you're late teens, early 20s, that there is a ton of biphobia. And then with more life experience, people realize that that's like really stupid and that you shouldn't be. But I do think it is because everything's more of a gray area, more of a spectrum now. I'd like to think it's better overall, but because for me it did follow that trajectory of like biphobic in my late teens and early 20s and then being like, what the fuck, like that's so stupid. And now, so I don't know if it's like actually better or if I'm just a better person now.
That's a good point. That's because I feel like for myself, like I even found when I first started dating women that I didn't think that I was biphobic, but I found like on the apps and stuff, I would be more likely to swipe on women who, you know, like on her, how it says like lesbian or bisexual, I'd be more likely to swipe on women who were lesbians. And I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this. This is like very invalidating. And I identified as a bisexual for like 14 years. And now I'm like, no. Like it's dumb. It's such bullshit. Like it's really so othering, but I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like, maybe you're afraid that they're going to like leave you for, maybe you feel like there's too much competition or something. I don't know. It's bullshit. It's dumb.
So we could do a whole other episode on biphobia. We've done it before. There's just so much, unfortunately, to go around, but we're talking about couples therapy. So when did you first ever go to couples therapy?
When I was married, my husband and I went, and then it was like the person that we went to see was a really good therapist. Like he was awesome. I really liked him. It was just like the problems weren't really about like that. It was more about like sexuality, obviously. So that didn't really help in the end, but it did help with like talking things through because I felt like that he and I actually always got along really well. But then when we moved to New York, there was just like so much stress, like a lot of like financial stress, you know, because you're like, we can't afford to like live here because it's so expensive.
Right. Who can?
And so couples therapy helped with that. And now I'm doing it again. So I'm just.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Constantly doing it.
Were you both individually in therapy prior to couples therapy, or was it anyone's first time in therapy in general?
Actually, yeah, we both had gone to therapy individually, like when we lived in Rochester. And then we moved to the city, we like didn't really prioritize it, which was also probably why we were like going insane. But we both had experience with it. So I think that helped to make it not so intense when we first started going.
Allie and I want to get couples therapy, but I'm currently not in therapy. And I feel like I need to like at least get some like months of therapy again under my belt before going into couples therapy for some reason.
Because you're a competitive Capricorn.
I know. And I got to be good.
You feel
good
like
at
it's
this.
Not fair. It's yeah. Not. It's
and
not fair if Allie's already.
The language, and I can't have that.
She's going to win couples therapy.
I know.
Do you feel like there is this thing in therapy where you're like trying to win over the therapist to see things from your side? And you're like, oh, who's this therapist going to validate me? Or them.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your sign?
I'm the same as you guys. I'm Capricorn. In fact, oh. Carolyn, I think that you and I have the same birthday. We're January 1st, right? Do you have January 1st?
Fuck out of here.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. All right. I love it. So, okay. So we all need to win at therapy. Yeah. Great.
Yes. So we all are Capricorns and we all have to be the most aggressive person in the room. So yes, and in fact, the first person that my girlfriend and I were going to see, we saw her like once, and it's through BetterHelp, you know, cause it's the pandemic. So we're like, okay, we have to do it online.
Okay. So through BetterHelp, you were able to try a couple different counselors and you found one that fit for both of you. That's another thing with finding or with going to couples therapy. It's how do you find the right person that both people feel comfortable with.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard because I feel like with Colleen, like she always tends to like get really, she'll like cry. She'll get very emotional and cry, which is fine. Like that's a fine response. But I feel like that it kind of makes me feel like I'm like, oh, I'm an asshole because she's crying and I'm like not, you know, like I'm like being mad and
Capricorn,
aggressive.
Capricorn.
Right.
Yeah.
being very angry and I'm being very judgmental and being very harsh. I'm like, get your shit together. And she's like crying. So I feel like sometimes couples therapists will like be more sympathetic towards her because she's like, you know, visibly upset and like fully weeping. And they're like, oh my God, Colleen, are you okay? And I'm like, what about me? And so it doesn't go well sometimes.
Yeah. Because they can't hear our internal screams. We're suffering on the inside.
Yes.
We're just not showing it.
Exactly.
What's her sign?
Scorpio. It's almost her birthday. So it's.
Oh, happy birthday, okay. Colleen.
Yes.
Yes.
Very emotional woman. There's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of complexities. It's like very stressful.
Intense.
But yeah.
Do you feel like in both situations, do you wish you had gone to couples therapy sooner?
No, I not. Well, yes, I guess in marriage it would have been good because we had been together for like a really long time before we went. I think we'd already been together for like 8 years or something. So it'd been a long time.
Okay. Yeah.
But with this one, no, because we've only been together about 2.5 years. So I feel like if you go before that, it's like might be like something's really wrong. Like there's a problem. You know? Like it's too soon. So and I honestly don't even know if we would have to go except for that like it's. I felt like our relationship went through like a huge crisis because of the pandemic, because we were like thrown into doing long distance. And then she was having like a professional, just kind of like a professional and personal like mental health crisis. And like I was having one too. And so it was just, So I think it was pandemic related probably.
So in your last relationship, you were poly. Was Colleen poly? Like, was she seeing other people or were you the only person she was seeing? Or and then like now you're monogamous together?
Yeah, now. Okay. Well, she was she technically was, you know, free to obviously do anything that she wanted, but she wasn't really seeing anyone else. Like, I think when we first started seeing each other for like the first couple months, she went on some dates. But then I don't know. She also was like very busy. She had like a big time corporate job at the time. So it was like very busy with work. And she was like, I don't have time to date, but I don't really know if that was why, or like if there was an underlying thing. And now we are, we're technically like still open, but I don't feel like there's really anything happening. There's no openness happening really. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But not open to polyamory anymore, I guess. Not open to serious relationships with other people, because I feel like that is very difficult to do and probably wouldn't work for either one of us in the long run. Because it's a lot of like, I don't know, it's just very tiring, you know?
That's how I feel about it. As somebody who's not polyamorous or wouldn't want to be, because it seems like I know the amount of attention and work that it takes for one relationship. And I'm like, how do you do that with two?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess parents do it with kids, but
yeah,
I guess that's the argument they always say, like, oh, when you have more kids, it's not like you the first one any less when you have a second one. But I'm like, but you're so much more exhausted, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You see a mom that has just one kid. Yeah. They still have a little bit of pep in their step. But yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
It does seem so draining. I've been putting it off because of that, like, few hours after, like, I'm dreading, or just like that discomfort, like, just like tiptoeing around if you have a difficult session, or,
like,
were said that and then the session ends and then what? You're just, especially in lockdown, like, and then you're just locked into a tiny apartment with this person creeping around like everything you just said.
Exactly.
I don't know, I'm really nervous about that.
That's totally valid. It is scary. Like, I feel like the one that we have coming up today, it's like, I'm not like dreading it, but it is kind of awkward because you're like, you know, we don't live together yet. She just comes and she actually lives in Washington, D.C. with her family right now. So she'll come and stay for like a week, sometimes like 2 weeks or whatever. She'll stay at my apartment and I'm happy to have her here, but it is a kind of small apartment. And then it's like, okay, you do the therapy and then you're just like closing your computer and just like sitting there. And
right.
It's,
yeah.
Super stressful. Yeah.
Yeah. That can definitely add stress to it. Backing up, I've done couples therapy with each significant relationship I've been in. Mm-hmm. The first time was because they cheated on me in the biggest way they had cheated on me up until that point.
Jesus.
And they basically said, let's go to therapy. I want to make this work. And I felt like I didn't really had a choice, but I was also open to it. And I hadn't gone to therapy on my own at that point. But then it was this kind of awkward thing where I felt like it was more just to serve them and not really helping me. And I was just sitting there while they processed being a shitty partner. The second time it was with my ex-wife. Definitely went too late. I think we were already headed in separate directions, but it was like a last ditch effort. And couples therapy is a last ditch effort. I don't think is ever really successful, but it can help bring that ending about and help you talk about the ending, I guess, in a healthy way.
Yeah.
And then Cecilia and I tried it right before the pandemic, and we went to two sessions. And this is what I want to talk about. Like, we talk about everything. Like, when you're in a relationship with a queer one, it's just constant talking and processing and just hours long conversations about feelings. And then we'd show up to couples therapy, and I just felt like we were repeating a great conversation about our feelings that we already had. And we were going there because we're like, okay, this time we're going to do couples therapy right, which is going when things are good. Mm-hmm. And then just talking through maybe some of the reoccurring challenges that come up. But just so when things get really hard, you have that therapist there who knows you. But then after two times, we're like, we got this. We don't need this. What? She didn't bring up anything we haven't brought up before. And we're both like in therapy individually. So yeah, does sometimes it feel like it's too much processing?
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, honestly, it's kind of...
That was so long-winded. Sorry.
No, that's fine. It's kind of a waste of money to go, like, because it does cost money, obviously. And you're just like...
Money, it takes time.
Money,
yeah.
Time. It's like, if you and Cecilia don't really have issues that you feel like need to be worked out with like a mediator type person, then it's like, yeah, why waste the money and the time? You know, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And we recently... opened up our relationships, and we're doing like ethical non-monogamy, and I talk about this more on the Patreon, just to remind everybody. I'm not getting into the details too much here, but
I know when you said you weren't polyamorous, I was like, but
what, it's different.
Are you gonna say
it's
what
different.
You are?
Yeah, you have to explain it a little bit. But is it like not dating other people exactly, just like sleeping with other people, or can you not talk about it? Is it for the Patreon?
No, I can talk about it a little bit. It's not like, I don't know. It's still early, so who's to say where it's going? I don't want anybody that I'm calling my girlfriend. I don't want to be like, this is my wife and this is my girlfriend, you know? It's more of
polysexual?
I think a physical thing.
Yeah. a little polysexual. I like it. I love
is
that.
Is it polysexual? Well, like, yeah, I'm open to like repeat partners, but nothing where I'm not getting anyone a gift, you know, they're not coming back to that. Like, don't expect a card on your birthday, I guess, is where I'm at right now. So this has dominated a lot of our conversations, a lot of our time. And we've talked about, should we go to couples therapy then to talk about this? Because we're talking about it in individual therapy. But then I'm like, I don't know how much more I can talk about this. This already, I feel like we've already maxed out what I thought was capable in terms of conversations about feelings since we've started this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine just bringing it into even another realm of here's...
Of course.
Here's a third place for us to talk about this yet again.
It gets so tiring. And sometimes, like, in relationships, I know this is a huge stereotype, but I have obviously noticed in the past, like, 2 years, this is the first time I've been in, like, a long-term serious relationship with a woman. And it is, like, sometimes you're just like, we have talked about this so much. We've, like, talked. Like, I feel like when I was married to a straight man, there just, like, wasn't quite that level of, like... rehashing and going over and how do you feel? And that's not like a bad thing. Like, I think it's good that women have this like emotional maturity to do that. But sometimes I think the problem is that like neither person knows when to stop. And you're just like, now I'm like just becoming this person who needs to talk about everything all the time. And sometimes it's better to not to not talk about it.
It's like diminishing returns at a certain point, I think.
Exactly.
For sure.
Exactly. And now, but Melody, I was going to ask, you were saying on a previous podcast, I remember, you were saying that you, that Allie would not do open relationship, that she doesn't even like when people bring up open relationships, right?
Yeah, Allie has deep-seated abandonment issues. When Carolyn and Cecilia opened their marriage, I was afraid to tell Allie because I knew the news of them opening it would trigger her in some way. Aww. Like she's that.
Poor Allie.
You know, and she's working on that in therapy, and she's like relatively new to therapy right now. Yeah, super monogamous.
Yeah. But that's cool too. Like whatever works for people, as long as both people are like, as long as you guys are both happy in it, I think that that's like the main thing.
I am a flirt. She knows this. I'm very open about that. I go out and I flirt with people, and she's like, I'm just naturally very flirty, I think. And that's just kind of where it stops. It's just fun. Is that a toxic trait, actually? I don't know.
Only if you're doing it in a way that's like, see, if you're talking about it on the podcast, and I think it's okay if you were just like secretly going around flirting with everyone and she had no idea, then maybe that would be.
Yeah, you saw me at FranCon. I'm very just like,
It's hard not to be flirty when you're getting your FranCon on.
When you're surrounded by all these dykes in blazers, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
A lot of blazers. I know. I saw the pictures from that. I was like, wait, this looks like a really good time. Like,
A lot of cuties.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something we'll tackle right away, probably, if and when we do couples therapy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think
really
that,
the
like,
abandonment issues.
Not you being a flirt and flirting with all the blazer women. Not that. Yeah. Yeah. I think couples therapy is good probably for all relationships, but like I also think like what Carolyn said, if everything's going well, it's like kind of just becomes like a waste of time. I think that you know, only if it's helpful, and I think for me it has been helpful, but it can be like really tiring, and it can be really just like, I don't know, you have to like do so much self-reflection, and you already do that in your own therapy, so then you have to do your own therapy, and then you have to do couples therapy, so there's just so much like inward self-reflection, and then by the end of it you're like, I guess I'm just like a piece of shit, like I guess that's my thing, is like being a piece of shit, but you know, it's fine.
How do you feel about going to bed angry? Are you, for both of you, are you people who are like, never go to bed angry? Or is it sometimes like, I don't want to argue until 4 a.m.?
I'm like, we fight till dawn!
No, Melody, no! I think I'm more like you. I think I'm like you in that way. I think I'm like, I want to keep the fight going. But I think that I realize that it like just becomes insane then, you know, like it goes, it gets so, and then you're like sleep deprived and you're just like fighting and talking and crying. And it's just like, ugh, it's horrible. Right. It's horrible.
I don't know if I read it, if it was in The Ethical Slut or not, where they say sometimes it's okay to go to bed angry, because Cecilia's very much a like, do not go to bed angry. We always make sure when we go to bed. But then I feel like there are some times where I'm like, we're exhausted, and I feel like it's not a good time to be trying to solve this right now. And then we're both going to be cranky the next day. Like, let's just call it a night and resume later. Like,
exactly.
Get some nourishment, get some sleep, brain fuel. Like, I am someone who needs to fight until it's resolved. But actually, like, it's just, for some people, especially with their mental health, that's not an option. And I'm learning that through Allie's therapist, who's like told her to tell me that like she can't do that. And like, you know, she has like mood swings and she's bipolar. Like sometimes she needs to just be left alone to process and to come down and to like really gather her thoughts to be able to have a productive conversation. And like, we're just spinning wheels a lot of the time. And I need to be better about letting her have that space.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm similar to you. I feel like I'm always like, we gotta hash it out. But then I can just see that it's making the situation worse. And I can see that like my girlfriend's getting more and more upset. And then she's becoming like more aggressive towards me. And then and it just becomes like worse and worse. You know, you keep trying to fix it. And by trying to fix it, you're actually making
it worse.
Yeah,
you can make it so much worse, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, oh, now
past experience.
Right. And you're like, we should have just gone to sleep. Like, we shouldn't have, like, because then I found if you like walk away from it. And then like even only for like half an hour or whatever, and then you come back, it's usually so much better. Like if you like walk away instead of pushing, like white knuckling your way through a conversation, you know,
you just keep working right. yourself up and like finding more little things to fixate on. And you can like just cause a web of fights.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, that's another great thing I'll say for the ethical slut is that listening to it together, actually, I feel like it's a form of couples therapy in itself because it has exercises. Like, even if you're going to stay monogamous, it talks about different feelings of insecurity or jealousy or not getting your needs met that can come up. And how do you talk about them? And how do you get through them? And what do you do when there is conflict? And how do you practice, you know, having one person talk uninterrupted for a certain amount of time and then walking away for 10 minutes and then getting back together and having the like some healthy, productive tactics for doing these things. And also just some like general sharing exercises. So I'm a convert. I can't recommend it enough. Just in terms of, yeah, learning how to be better at arguing or.
Yeah. I love that book. Actually, James Tyson was the one. They were the one who recommended it to me. I love
All
it.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my favorite.
James Tyson, that's a comedian. Like non-binary comedian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Allie was just on a show them. With them.
They're really, really funny. And
I've heard great things.
We became friends immediately because we were like doing an open mic together like 4 or 5 years ago. And we were talking on stage about polyamory and how it's basically just like, you know, like people who go to the Renaissance Festival. And then me and James were like, oh, yeah, that is what it is. Like,
it is. Oh, my gosh. They bring up the Ren Faire so much in the ethical slut.
What?
And now, we live by the Ren Faire. We live like the town over from the New York.
Oh my
Ren
God.
Faire.
I thought you meant live by like as a code.
No, we live by
code of the Ren Faire.
I have a corset on right now.
Sorry.
In proximity. We got you. I know where you live then. Not to be creepy, but I know where it is. It's like, so weird. You drive by there and there's like all the like old timey, like houses in the forest. You're like, what the fuck is this? Like, what is this land? Like,
we still have never been, but it's when they talk about like where to find other poly people, they're like, go to the Ren Faire. It's all polyamorous people.
It is.
And I was like, wait, what?
Dude, it is. It's like people who love anime and people who love the Ren Fest and people who are polyamorous. It's like that's all just one thing, you know?
Yeah, people who like to play different roles and they like role play type things and they like going to cons and dressing up and being different characters and stuff tend to be more open to multiple relationships or connecting outside of their
marriage.
That's
so funny.
Yeah. And that was how me and James became best friends because they were like, yes. And then they were like, take this copy of The Ethical Slut. And I was like, yes. I learned.
I feel like we were on a show together at that gay bar that was on the Upper West Side that has karaoke.
It's called Sweet. It's like the most random place. It's like these old gay men.
We did like a daytime comedy show there. Oh. Yeah, yeah. I remember that three of us were on that. it's such a funny, I actually love doing that show. It's like 4 p.m. on a Sunday and it's like three old gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Are your audience.
I love it. I probably doesn't exist anymore. I feel like the pandemic took it out, right? Like
I don't know how it survived.
It was great though. It would be like, there'd be like music videos playing behind you. It is crazy.
A disco ball, yeah.
Yeah, New York City comedy really like, I feel like when you start in a different scene and you guys, I'm sure, or no, I'm sorry. I don't know, Carolyn, did you start in a different scene or did you start in New York?
No, I started in New York,
Oh, okay. So if you've been thrown right into like the fire, than if you started in New York. But if you started in a different scene, you can like very easily get this sense of self, like, oh, I'm like the feature at the club. I'm like, you know, but then you move to New York and you're just like knocked down so hard because you're just like, I'm doing a show. There's like two people here. There's like fully the TV is on behind me. And like, I like that about New York because then you see someone go up and you're like, oh, wow, this person was just on Conan. And you're like, and here we all are together. And it's like kind of like an equalizer in a horrible way, you know?
Yeah, horrible. I don't know. I'm like, this sounds like my hell, actually. this show you're describing.
It is a hell. No, it's a hell, but it humbles you.
Yeah,
humbles.
Literally like in a thrift shop with Colin Jost.
Yeah.
Like, why? What are you doing here, Colin?
That's like what
you're married to ScarJo. You don't need to be in this thrift store.
Exactly.
Going through your notebook.
Yeah. Wow. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, it's so bizarre too, because that's like what the Sweet Show was. It would like, when I first moved to New York, I did that show and there were people on it who I was like, oh, these people have like big credits. These people, you know, people that when I was in Rochester, people would be like, ooh la la. But then we were all just fucking there. And it's like, it is horrible. I'm not trying to say it's a good thing, but I'm just saying it's like kind of fun because you're like, wow, we're all in this together.
Yeah. Right. Do you think that comedians are probably more likely to need couples therapy to help their partners understand, unless you're dating another comedian, Melody?
That's its own. That must bring about its own kind of issues, though, dating another comic.
Yeah, I feel like if we got couples therapy, we would like put a lot of our relationship issues and like tackle like our issues as comedians dating each other, because we do have a lot. Like, I can't perform in front of Allie anymore.
Really?
Like, or I used to open for her, feature for her. Like, she's been doing it longer. She's a lot stronger of a stand-up. And it would, like, psych me out. I'd get in my head. I've talked to other comedian couples about this, too. And it's a thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I'd love to, like, go to your show. Can we get in therapy? Can you get a therapist and talk about this? Like, I bomb like a lot of the time when I'm on a show with Allie. Like, it's something very weird happens where I'm so in my head about her seeing me, even though she should be the last person I'm worried about judging me.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
And you guys have been together for a little while, right? Like, haven't you been?
Yeah,
like
almost 5.5 years.
But
when we started, she was on her way out of the Chicago comedy scene. And I, like, we were long distance for a year and a half. And then I didn't realize it was an issue for at least the first 2 years of our relationship until I moved here and we're actually in a comedy scene together.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I've never had like a relationship with a comic, so I don't really know. But I could see that being really, because there's so much competition, and like, I think I would get in my head about it too.
Oh yeah, there were some things, because like, I was starting to come up in Chicago, and then she had moved here, and like you said, it knocks you down a few pegs, and she was struggling and trying to like rebuild. Meanwhile, I'm like getting Comedy Central auditions and showcases in Chicago, and she really struggled with that, which blew my mind, because I'm like, you have TV credits, like I just got an audition. Like, it's just so, everything's competitive no matter where you are
in
your comedy career. There's so few chances.
Yeah,
you know?
I think I honestly don't know if I could date another comic. It just seems like, I know that there are comics, obviously, in relationships. You guys have been together for a while and it's like you are in love. But it just, to me, it feels very like overwhelming. Like,
it is a mind fuck.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be stressful.
Well, I know and I don't know if you experienced this with Colleen or with your ex, but with Cecilia, sometimes, because she does support me in a way, like, she does the art for Dyking Out, and when she comes to an event, she'll be like, oh, I'll work the social media or something like that. And it's hard sometimes for her to know, when am I working and when am I not working? So just for example, we went to FranCon and she's like, are you here in work mode or are we just here to, I'm like, no, we're just here to enjoy. But yeah, I will be talking about it on the podcast. Like, yes, there's probably a lot of queer people here. Yes, there are listeners who recognize me and are like, oh, you're from Dyking Out. And then all of a sudden I'm, you know, the co-host of Dyking Out again. And the lines are so blurred and it can be very confusing for her. Like when we were at Girls in Wonderland and we get to the pool party and I'm like, okay, cool. Before we jump in the pool, I'm just going to like make the rounds and be networking and talking to listeners. And I've got my Dyking. And she's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, this is my first day at the pool party. I thought we're partying. I'm like, well, we will. But and that's like a very tough thing. Do you struggle with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think with Phil, when I was married, it was he and I were already together before I started comedy. So I think that he like, and then he also is like a videographer and does a lot of podcast editing. So he's like very in the community. So I think he got it a little bit more because he was like in it. Not as a comic, but in it. And with Colleen, she just is like, so works in like completely different field, like has no like connection to it at all. And I do feel like there is this weirdness. Like I remember when we first started seeing each other and she came to a show, then I think she was like really disappointed because I had invited her to the show. I thought she would like it. Like I was kind of trying to be like, ooh, like, you know, trying to impress her or whatever. And it didn't go very well because she was like, you didn't actually hang out with me at all. You just like hung out with the other comics. And I was sitting alone. And then we like got on the train and you like went home, like didn't hang out. And I was like, oh, my bad. Like, I wasn't really thinking about, you know, you don't think you're just like, oh, she's going to be impressed with like how funny I am. And I'm doing this cool club show and with somebody, you know, with like Gary Gulman, she's like, she doesn't give a shit. Like, she doesn't care.
Love him.
I know. And to me, I was like, Gary Gulman. But, you know, she doesn't care. And it doesn't like mean anything to her, really. So it was just, I think that I completely understand what you're saying. I think sometimes it's hard because you want your partner to come to shows or to things like that. But then,
yeah, it's nice when they're being supportive.
Yeah.
But it's also like, but I'm focused on other things. Like, I'm working.
And they're so left out, you know, because you're like talking to all the other comics and you're doing all your like little networking or whatever you're doing. And they're just like completely left out. Although when I was at your guys, one of your L word things, Cecilia was so great. And she seems pretty good at being like left out and still not getting like upset about it. It seemed like.
Yes. Yeah. She's used to it by now. And then for things when it's our events, when it's a diking out thing, she, you know, she has fun. She's doing her thing. It's also good. Like, she's an artist. So if anything, she has her sketchbook with her. And if she's feeling like neglected, she'll just start drawing. Yeah. And then she's back in her happy place.
Good.
So that's some good coping mechanisms. But no, she does have fun going to the events and she loves being in queer spaces and she loves watching me perform, which is all good. But then at a certain point, like I remember I was going to Emily Winter's book release for her book One Day Smarter. Mm-hmm. And Cecilia was like, well, is this just going to be like you networking with comedians? I'm like, well, it'll be me seeing comedians that are my friends and talking to my friends, but also, yeah, maybe it'll be some net. And she's like, well, I don't know if I want to go.
Yeah, you know? I wouldn't if I wasn't a comic. I mean, it's gross a lot of the time.
Right.
It is gross.
But she met Emily at a wedding recently and really liked her and they had like great conversations. But then, yeah, it's hard for partners of comedians, I think is what I'm saying. Yeah, and that maybe
that is one good thing about dating comedian. They get it. And they're out there being gross and networking too.
Totally. I think, you know, there was one time where Colleen said something that was so jarring to me, but she was like, I was saying about a comedian, I described them as a friend and she was like, but are they really a friend or are they just one of those people you say is your friends because you guys want to like do each other's shows or whatever? And I was like,
real talk from Colleen.
No, I was like, what? And I believe we'd only been dating for like 6 months or something. I was like, oh, you already like figured out the dynamic of this. Like,
oh, that part's obvious.
But it kind of hurt my feelings because I was like, no, this person is actually my friend. Like, I do have genuine friends in the scene. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's people that you're like, this person's my friend, or there's comics like with you guys, I'm always like, oh, these guys are really cool. I want to like get to know them more. Or like when I first like, you know, when I first was in the queer scene, there's like people who I'd be like, I really want to make this person my friend. But then there's other people who you're kind of just like, I should be nice to them because I see them. But like,
right.
You know, and it is a little gross because it's so disingenuous. So I kind of get why she was saying that. But like, damn, I was like, don't call me out like that. That's like hard.
Pivoting back to couples therapy, do you think that there's a stigma to it? Like when Do you get nervous telling people, like, right now, everybody's listening that you're in couples therapy?
And they're making assumptions?
People are going to be like, yeah, they're going to be like, oh, something's wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I was nervous, like, with my one, you know, I have all these different, like, friend groups in my one friend group chat. I was like texting them about it and they were like, oh, well, you guys have only been seeing each other like 2 years. Like, well, something must be really wrong. Well, like what, you know? And I was like, I don't know. Things have been wrong. Like things have gone really wrong. But I think that like, it's odd that people assume that by going to couples therapy, that something is really wrong. Because I think usually for me, it's like, I would rather go before things become wrong to the point of no return. And right. I think it's better to do that, right? Because then you're like, okay, I cut it off before it got to the point where we had to break up.
I mean, it's a sign that at least one of you wants to make it work.
Exactly.
Right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is a good thing rather than just letting something self-destruct over time, maybe. But I remember when I went to couples therapy with my ex-wife and happened to have referred a friend to a therapist in the same practice, and we were all in the waiting room. So they were in couples therapy.
Oh, God.
We were in couples therapy. We didn't realize the other was going to be there. It was kind of a weird time for all of us, and we felt like we were in the principal's office. And it kind of like it helped break the tension a little bit, because it can be awkward being in the waiting room for therapy and then you see other people and you're like, oh, I wonder, you know, how fucked up they are.
I feel like that would be a really weird moment, though. You know, like even though yeah. you know it's not a bad thing to go, it's still just like, oh, OK, we're all here together.
Well, you yeah. always see like media representation. They only ever go to couples therapy when something's wrong. Like you never right. see it on TV. Like that's never written into a storyline that like, yeah, this is this couple and they go just to maintain a very healthy relationship. Like we don't really see that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I feel like for this situation, this time around, it was like, I think it was like, we both felt that our relationship had been like really good. And then there were all these things that some of it was our doing 100%, but like a lot of it was just like things that happened to us, like things that like health wise or like work wise, pandemic, stuff like that.
Right.
And I don't know, I don't want to say that like we wouldn't have problems were it not for that, but I think it was like a lot of outside factors. So it's like, all right, let's go and talk about these things that have,
right.
you know, and I also, to be honest with you, like any couple that like went through the pandemic and didn't get like fucked up, or any person that didn't get like fucked up by the pandemic, I am very wary of that, because I'm like, isn't this traumatic? Like, aren't we all traumatized? You know?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and we had COVID at the same time.
Yes.
Because we were messaging all during that, and it was kind of comforting to know people who are on the same timeline and do symptoms check-ins.
Yes.
But it was scary. That was a scary time to have it.
It was really scary because we both had it so early, and it was like,
yeah,
it was just horrible. That was horrible. Yeah. And the isolation was horrible, and, you know, just the whole thing. It was just, I don't know, it was terrible. So...
Yeah. In terms of the timing of your separation then from your husband, how mm-hmm. did that line up with the pandemic?
It was like right at the beginning of the pandemic. So it was like,
okay,
not great, you know, just not.
Yeah.
But I also think that it was one of those things where even though he and I had been like very happily married, I had like had in my mind this issue of sexuality for so long and had kind of been so, so busy with work and comedy that I was just like, I'll just deal with that at another time, you know, like we'll think about that later. And then it was the pandemic and I like had COVID. I didn't have a job. I didn't have shows. And within like 2 weeks, I was like, oh, I really have to talk to him about this because, you know, obviously it just yeah. gave you a lot of time to think and be aware of yourself.
You can't distract yourself from your problems anymore. You don't have the same excuses to put them off, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
How was it being with Colleen while you were going through a divorce? Because that's like such a stressful thing.
I think that that was probably like the start of like issues, because it right. was like such a change of being in a polyamorous thing to being like, hey, I'm separating from this person and now I would like to be with you primarily, like as my main person. And I tried to be very honest and be like, and if you don't want to do that, like, that's totally fine. Like, I know this isn't your original thing that you signed up for. It's totally fine.
Was she seeing other people?
No, not really. She wasn't really. And also she was kind of just, she went back to stay with her parents. And I think that she was just kind of like going, you know, just having a like mental breakdown because it was the beginning of the pandemic. So I think it was just like,
right.
I don't think she would have even had like the mental energy to like talk to other people or like go on the apps or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So it was really hard. And then I think I fell for a couple months into this thing of, wanting like really high levels of commitment from her, but I don't think that I wanted them for like genuine reasons. I think I wanted them because I was so used to being married and I perhaps like felt like I couldn't function without somebody being really committed to me, somebody being my life partner. So then like later.
Oh, I'm triggered.
I know. Sorry. I know. No,
that's good. That's good.
I
know my story.
I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like this codependent person. And that wasn't what I wanted. But I found myself being like, oh, like you have to commit to me. We have to be serious. And then I was like, am I doing this because I really love her and want to be committed? Or am I doing it because I'm afraid of the prospect of being alone? So then I think what was good was actually that we did have the long distance and we still technically have long distance, even though we like are together a lot, like semi, you know, she'll stay for long periods of time, but I stayed with my family for a while as well. And we were pretty long distance. And I think that that was good because it was, I couldn't force the commitment. I couldn't make any like rash decisions. I couldn't be like, move in with me. You know, I was like, I'm staying with my parents. You can't move in with me, you know?
Automatic boundaries.
Yes.
But what do your parents know about everything that's going on? Like, do they?
They know. They actually know everything. They're pretty like, they're pretty cool, you know? They're like pretty, they were kind of confused by it, but they're pretty cool with everything. Just confused, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember when Cecilia and I got together and it was like the paperwork and stuff from our divorces haven't like mine had been submitted but not finalized. Her and her partner had broken up, but they hadn't even like filed yet. And it felt really weird wanting to be supportive, but also being like, this is none of my business, or like trying not to get involved in some, like, that's kind of a big thing to deal with, you know, early on in a relationship is like, oh, you know, normally that's a time when like your friends and your family are being so supportive of you when you're going through that. But then your partner, if you have one, that's kind of a weird thing for them to have to be like supportive of. Cause like, sure, they're in favor of it.
Yeah, of course.
But they can't be like too happy about it because it's like a hard time emotionally, you know? It's a hard.
Exactly. What I found was that like, I think it would be really inappropriate for me to like ever talked with her too much about it, like talk about the logistics of it too much, or like if I felt like I was like falling into like talking shit about my husband, which I tried really hard to not do, but if I ever felt like I was doing that, I was like, well, that's kind of inappropriate, like that's like crossing a boundary. So but I get what you're saying, it's hard because it's like you want to talk, it's a huge part of your life getting divorced, so it's like you want to talk about it, but it's just inappropriate, I think, and it's like weird a little bit.
That's what friends are for.
Yes, exactly. Friends and therapy.
Family. Therapy. Gotta get therapy.
You gotta go. Melody, you gotta go.
I know.
No, you don't have to, but you should. No, I do think everyone really should go.
Oh, yeah. I'm wrecked by the pandemic. Like, I'm so traumatized. I'm hanging on by a thread. Like, barely.
Dude. But you know what? I'm very suspicious of people who aren't, like, in a way. I'm just like, how
Me
are
too.
You... You know, like when you see comics and they're like, everything's great.
Well, I guess not everyone has depression. Like Carolyn, sometimes I just don't even understand how you're like, remember you got depressed once over the pandemic? Not once, but like you were like, remember you were just like, I was depressed a few days ago and I just don't know how you do it.
Yeah, no, I experienced.
Imagine.
Right. I'd gone my whole life with like I had one small episode of depression when I was going through a lot of health problems as a teen. But besides that, I wouldn't say that I've been what I would consider depressed until the pandemic. And even then, it was a good, like, at least 8 months in before it hit me. And then I started, I've had like a few episodes where I just went to like a really dark place and I wasn't used to it. And it made me, and I just kept thinking, is this how Melody feels
constantly
all the time?
Every day?
And it was blowing my mind because I found it so hard to function within those times. And granted, I'm not on like any kind of medication. So yeah, it was just, wow.
Yeah. You were blowing my mind explaining how you've like, how just like,
what a difference it is.
Yeah. Like this new feeling, which is something I, you seemed relatively well adjusted aside from that though. You're like, let's write a pilot. Let's do this. I'm crying on Zoom. Like,
let's write a book.
Yeah. Oh my God. Remember that?
The book. You're like, overwhelming me. Just to be honest, I don't think I'm in a place where I can just write a book right now. I'm like, all right, too much.
I wake up crying. Maybe next year.
Yep. Yeah, I do think, I mean, I think it was just so difficult to get through that, like, it did make people like, my husband also suffered from like a major depressive disorder. And it was, I was like, oh, this is just how you feel like all the time. And now I feel, and it's, and it does make you, I guess, more empathetic to it. Cause you're like, I understand why you have trouble finding a job or getting out of bed because this is really tiring. So
yeah, and that's why I have trouble finding a therapist. I'm like too depressed to like, just to take that on. It feels like a huge undertaking. Like,
exactly.
Like, dating around with like finding the right match. It's like very overwhelming. Right.
Yeah. No, yeah, that makes sense. Cause it's like usually people who really need therapy, people who are struggling with like, you know, anxiety or depression, something like that, finding the therapist is like too hard. Like doing the work to doing small tasks, even if they're small, is like too much. So it's like, it's just like a cycle. So yeah, so I'm sorry. I wish someone else could do it for you.
I know, but it's all on me.
It's rough. I know.
I also feel like therapy is part of what made me depressed. Like that, you know, like digging into your repressed issues. I think I'd repress stuff so hard over the years. It formed like a diamond of pain and horrible feelings. And my therapist like mined it out of me. And then all of a sudden there's like this shiny thing of my feelings reflected back on me. And I'm like, oh no, this is dark.
Yeah.
This is bad.
Yeah. You're like, oh, shit.
And, but like, I'm better for it. But that's another thing with therapy too. And especially like couples therapy. Sometimes you go into therapy thinking you're there to talk about one thing. And then, surprise, motherfucker, it's like, this issue that you both have been lying to yourselves about, and we're going to bring it to the surface, and will this break you, you know?
Yeah. And then it's like some horrible revelation. Like, there was one time where we were in couples therapy, like a month or two ago, where things had just gone so south for us and it was going so bad. And there was something that had happened, and like, it was something that we like are getting over and it's okay now, but it was something that had happened. And I basically, we like went into therapy and I was like, I don't know if I can like get over this. Like, I don't know if we can continue on in our relationship after this. And it clearly came as like a huge shock to my girlfriend. She was like, wait, what? Like, I thought that we were, she was like so upset. And I was like, oh, I should have like prepped you. I shouldn't have just been like, hey, we're going to break up. Like, but that happens sometimes because you start talking and then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I'm more upset about this than I realized.
But do you prep? Like, do people prep like going into a session, or are you supposed to just like,
I don't think so,
save it all? Like, how does that work? Are you just like, hey, heads up, I'm going to be dropping a little bomb about this like, no, 3 p.m. later today.
That'd be weird, right? And it's also, I don't know, with anxiety. You don't want to put that on them. Like, I'm going to drop a huge bomb on you. Like, but it does feel kind of bad to like not. I usually write notes of what I'm going to talk about, but I don't usually say it with the person. I don't know what other couples do. I'd be curious if people... Like, have you, like, Carolyn, when you went, did you guys like discuss what you were going to talk about, or was it not really?
The most recent, I guess every time there was kind of a thing we knew, like the first time I went with my ex, it was about the cheating. And then the second time it was like, you know, our marriage is broken. And then with Cecilia, there were a couple of things that it was like a pattern of the same argument that we would that would come up like once a month or something. And we're like, there is a miscommunication here and there is like a trigger and we can't seem to figure it out to break it. So we went in with like that mindset. Mm. Yeah.
That's good that you guys are, that you were both on the same page about things. I think that that helps a lot.
Yeah, but because we only went to two sessions and then the pandemic happened, like, I don't know what would have come out had we kept going. It's also weird because, like, individual therapy feels like such a safe space where even though therapy, couples therapy, like, it should be a safe space, but you're obviously being, like, very guarded about the way you're saying things because you don't want to start a fight in therapy. That's another thing. Like, you might say something in therapy because you're feeling like, oh, yeah, we're just talking about our feelings. And then you've created this whole other problem because of therapy. I mean, I genuinely think that therapy is a good and a positive thing, but I do think that couples therapy can be scary territory. And with that, you have to go to couples therapy soon. So I don't.
Oh my!
Don't
do you literally have your appointment?
Is that
in 8 minutes?
What time is it? No, it's okay. It's good. It's not till 4:30. We're good. I just want to have a buffer. I just want to have a buffer of time.
Yeah, of
so it
course.
Wasn't, like,
right, right. We need to give you time to adjust.
That's
so
great.
It's not like, because then can you imagine if I like go into it and I'm like doing bits or something, then it would be like, oh God, kill myself. And then I have to stop making jokes about killing myself too. That was another thing. Kelly was like, can you stop saying you're going to kill yourself all the time? And I was like, I can't. No.
Yeah.
I, that's kind of my thing, is saying I'm going to kill myself. So, but you guys are so awesome. I was there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Should we talk, discuss anything else, or are we good?
You know, we're all just broken humans trying to get
trying
through this
best.
Crazy thing called life. And I don't know. I think we nailed it. Madeline, where can people follow you on social media and find out when you're performing so they can come and see you be super funny on stage?
Thank you. My name is Madeline Smith. It's spelled weird, so I don't know. It's M-A-D-E-L-E-I-N. Smith is easy, but the Madeline is, that part is hard. So you can find me on Instagram, on Twitter. It's Madeline Murphy. And my website is madelinesmithcomedy.com. And Sarah Garner and I actually have a podcast now called Cheers for Queers, although we've been on like a sabbatical because my health was really bad and we were both having mental breakdowns, but we're coming back soon. So you guys both have to come on it.
Yeah.
Please come on it.
Yes.
You are making a blood pact right now that you'll come on it. So
cheers for sure. Yeah.
And I have an album called Belle of the Ball that's on Spotify and everywhere.
Yes.
So please listen to it. Please listen. Thank you, guys.
Amazing. Love it. So glad we got to do this. You know, thank the goddess that Rosie agreed to do this first so we could
finally.
Dude, that was such a red letter day for you. I was like, Colleen, this is an amazing day for them. Like, I was pumped up. And your viewing parties at Henrietta's were so cool too. You got some really amazing guests. You guys are killing it.
I mean, the day we dropped the Rosie ep was the same day I also started a new job. And then also we got the email from Showtime saying that Leisha and Kate were coming to the viewing party. So it was like the most insane day of my life. Like, I'm like, is this real? Is any of it real?
That's amazing.
But anyway, yes. Thank you for not only being a guest of the pod, but a listener. We love it.
Yeah.
We love to see it.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Melody, did you sign up for therapy yet? I know it's only been an hour since our conversation.
Absolutely not.
You got to do it.
Check back in 2 months.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, then let's give someone else some unlicensed...
I know, who's going to want my advice after they hear about how I've been so negligent about my own mental health? But here we go. This week's listener question. I'm bi pan with a preference for basically anyone but cis men. Feel you. I have not had any kind of feelings for a cis man in quite a while, but there's a cis man that I work with that I'm developing all kinds of feelings for. I'm talking major crush status. I can't even stay focused when I'm around him. I've been daydreaming about him frequently, which makes it even worse. I have no idea how to navigate having feelings for a coworker like this. There have been a few moments where it seems like he may have feelings for me as well, but I could just be reading too much into it. I have no clue how to navigate this situation, and I need help. Well, you know a little bit about navigating feelings for a coworker, and I know a little bit about navigating
lusting for cis men.
Yeah, so let's put our heads together.
Yeah, I like this one because it's like I feel like maybe knowing that we are the co-hosts of Dyking Out, they're very adamant about like, listen, I would never consider like if a cis man was dying on the side of the road, I would keep driving. I would rob him and donate the money to the Trevor Project. Like, no, I hate cis men. But then it's like, it's okay. Cis men need love too. It's the one thing that's keeping them from shooting everything up.
Truly,
they need love.
Show them love. Keep our space is safe. Yeah. It's okay. I hope
don't
you're
fight
not
it.
I hope you're just playing all that up because you're writing into Dyking Out and we're not gonna have to address some internalized biphobia.
Yes.
It's okay.
Yes.
To be bi pan.
Yeah.
And be attractive to men. That's the whole point having that identity. Yeah.
If you have those feelings for someone, it's the whole, yeah, exactly. The whole point is that it's based on the person and it doesn't have to do with their genitals or how they identify or how they feel. It's you're just there for the person and that's great. And this person happens to be a cis man and there's no shame in that as long as, you know, he's not a terrible person, right?
Yeah. So how do we navigate
the coworker part?
Yeah, the coworker part.
That's a little bit more tricky. And as someone that has the, you know, married a coworker, dated past coworkers, it can be, I would say it's generally not a great idea, but then also I know so many married people who met at work. So I would say if it's somebody who is like on your team that you work directly with, maybe think about it before embarking on something. You know, maybe you two become better friends. Maybe you talk about it first. It would be something that you'd want to be clear on. I mean, you're not sure if he has feelings for you. Just be patient, maybe. I don't know. Ooh, I'm really bad at giving advice about this because I just know I would hate to be like, you know, go for it. Love only comes along once in a while. And when
and
you're
then
feeling
you're sitting
it,
in HR.
Right. Like, you know, it's employment in this country, especially when it's tied to health insurance, is kind of a big deal. It's kind of an important thing. So you don't want to put yourself in a situation that could make it uncomfortable for you to have to go to work. And it really, I think it all depends on the person and the situation. You know, when I decided to hook up with Cecilia, look, I wasn't making great decisions. I do think that that was a great decision, but at the time I was just kind of like, fuck it, I'm going through this time and whatever, this is just going to be like a rebound and we're both adults and we can both understand what's going on and neither of us, like, we'll figure it out. I'll deal with it later. I was being like a little bit chaotic in my decision making.
Yeah.
Had that not been the case, I probably would have recommended against it to myself. Hey, but it worked out for me. So follow your heart. Is that helpful? Is that unhelpful? At least we helped with the internalized biphobia, right?
I mean, we said one valid thing.
Right.
But yeah,
what
just,
do you think?
I don't even know if people work physically, or I guess in this case they do. Like, this office seems to be opened up post-COVID.
Right, right.
Which makes me think there might be a holiday party.
Oh,
which is
no.
When a lot of office sexual tension comes bubbling to the surface.
That's true.
That's when you can usually tell. Like, if you can't tell now in your interactions, I don't know if you're
Melody,
someone who drinks. What?
This is the best bad advice. This is really good because that's a time where you can do something at the holiday party and then be like, oopsie, like if it doesn't go well.
Yes. Okay, Carolyn
and be like,
we've been discussing
because I truly don't think I give good advice. I never, when you asked me to be co-host, I was like, yeah, totally. I am up for everything, and sort of downplayed that part. I'm not a good advice giver. I thought maybe we could do like a good cop, bad cop, like a Carolyn gives good advice. I give bad advice moving forward.
But this time your bad advice is the good advice.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we'll see how this goes.
We'll see how it plays out.
I think that is good, bad advice.
That's good, bad advice. Yeah.
There's bad, good advice and good, bad advice. And I'll be dishing all sorts of combinations moving forward. And I think, until the holiday parties, that's only like a month, month and a half away, right?
Some companies do it the first week of December. So I think that that is as good as this advice is going to get. So if you have a question for us and you want some questionable, maybe sensible, maybe joke advice, we have it all. It's a potpourri of...
Yeah, maybe you can also like add a caveat with like, no, I really need serious advice when you write it.
And this one was from a patron, so their question went to the top of the list, as always. But you can email us at dykingout@gmail.com. That's the best place. Sometimes people DM us advice at Instagram at dykingout, where you should be following us. But the way to really make sure that you get your question answered is to email dykingout@gmail.com, put listener questions somewhere in the subject line. Also, cries for help in the subject line are always entertaining.
Yeah.
And yeah, we can't wait to read them. We need to stock up. Follow us, as I mentioned, at Dyking Out Podcast on TikTok, at Dyking Out on Twitter. We're all over the place. I'm at TGI Carolyn.
I'm at Melody Kamali.
Thank you so much for diking out with us this week.
We love you. See you next Tuesday.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.